Hey everyone, it's another exciting episode of Scrotus POTUS. I'm your host, Wade McWayne. We have an exciting episode this week. Joining us, Dave Fulton from Idaho, Scott Capurro, another comedian from San Francisco. We're going to be talking a lot of great things. How's America doing? What's the report card? Scaramouche, the mooch, what's happened there? Obamacare, faking emails to the White House, trans in the military, Russia, North Korea, and lots of comedy. Share, subscribe, like it, whatever you can do. It's Scrotus POTUS. Enjoy. Well, it is. I just got back from Canada. My arms are tired. I just flew in because they sedated me, held me down on the plane. It's Scrotus POTUS episode 8, joined by two recurring guests. We've got Scott Capurro from San Francisco and Dave Fulton from Idaho, California. Two Americans, huh? Right here.
We're number 12 this week, I think.
It is.
Yeah.
It's lots of things going on in the world. America.
Mooch.
A lot of influence. Yeah.
Mooch.
Wow.
We'll get into that. I want to ask you guys. I want to give me a report card. How is America doing right now? If you were given a report card, Scott, what would you say?
Well, if you're a terrorist, they're doing great.
Okay.
Because the more unstable the government, the easier it will be to attack. So,
are you talking an inner American terrorist or an outsider terrorist?
Whatever you got.
Yeah.
We take what you got. Yeah.
Throw them at him. Dave, how's America doing?
Wow. I think we're, if you had to go from the traditional A, B, C, D, F, I think we're still passing. I think we're a D plus C minus. So,
might need some help after.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Typical of American students, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's, and it's still, there's still people who believe that, those grades don't count. You know, it's about your character.
That's participation.
That's what's going to get you to the next level. And we're all holding our breath. I mean, I was just back in America in June, and the first time back since the election. And
is it better? Is it greater?
Oh, it's really,
is it great again?
It's really weird. It's really. I met people that, you know, they're like, "Why'd you vote for Trump?" Well, I need to change this and that, and Hillary and blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand that. You know. And, like, do you still think it's going to work? And then you get one of two responses. You either get the, oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you go, oh, yeah. And then your eye flashes to the gun on the side. I agree with you completely. And then you get the other one, which is like, well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. You know, that kind of thing. So, and then they immediately bring back, well, better than Hillary. I'm like,
My friends haven't gotten out of bed yet from the January election or whatever. When is it, November? My San Francisco liberal friends have
bed sores by this point.
They can't open their eyes. They can't cope. They can't deal. All their liberal hopes and dreams and fears have been dashed.
What do you think about all those liberals and sort of in denial? You know, there's a lot of people that sort of the self-righteous one you see on Facebook.
They're pointing a lot of fingers. They are.
Well, it almost becomes hysterical at that point that it becomes that I didn't win, so I'm going to get angry and you're all stupid.
Well, he was a TV star for 10 years, and I think people forget that he was a very well-established entertainer, and maybe that's what the Democrats need to come up with. And they got a lot of them.
Yeah.
They got loads that say they're liberal, so let's cough it up.
Al right? Franken?
Well, there's a good example, but somebody even more famous like George Clooney. I know that sounds ridiculous to us, but Schwarzenegger was a governor, so get a movie star in there that's got nothing else to do but hang out in Lake Como and dry hump some 16-year-olds. I'm not saying what gender. Anyway, just, you know, get on with it. Like, push your credentials forward. Do something good for a change.
You mentioned Schwarzenegger, too, because Schwarzenegger and Trump used to be close, and Schwarzenegger was a Republican, but now they sort of hate each other.
Well, the Republican Party's turned their ideological backs on Schwarzenegger because he's pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
And because he cheated on his wife and had a baby with his maid and all that stuff. So, and also because
he's
come out.
But he cheated on a Kennedy, though. Shouldn't that be worth something extra?
And he's got a place in Idaho, by the way.
And a place in my heart. But I think,
and he's 70 years old.
He is, and looks green. Yeah. I mean, great. He looks great.
Yeah.
And I think that his political career is probably over. He took over The Apprentice, as you know, like got canceled. Yeah. So I think that if you're not a TV star, you don't get a nomination, and that's the way it should be. Look, politics are their show. It's show. It's all show. They're all actors. That's why the actors do well. I mean, you know, it's all fakery and performance from a room full of strangers and pushing your agenda forward in front of people that don't know you. That's what actors do.
But don't you think now that we've done this, we're actually starting to see behind the curtain, or people are actually starting to want to look behind the curtain and go, hey, what? It's all fake?
No, they don't want it. America's in denial big time. Big time. They're kind of looking at this going, there's no way that America will fail. This is going to get better. And as a result of this, because Trump essentially greenlit things like lying and cheating and, you know, false hopes and everything else like this. There's a whole group of people who believe that, hey, so what? The president lies, you know? If I told you one thing one day and another thing another day, so what? The president doesn't, you know? That kind of thing. And so now new kind of splinter groups, right-wing splinter groups, are coming into the forefront where we would never seen before, like the 3%ers and the Oath Keepers and all the other kind of makes the KKK guys look like, you know, what they are, which is, you know, ignorant hillbillies. But these guys are still pushing a white agenda and trying to maintain white enclaves. And their mission statement is, we're here to perpetuate and protect the First Amendment. And I sent them an email and said, hey, I'm having a Black Lives Matter rally. Could you guys run security? And they never got back to
me. It's weird, isn't it? You think they just want to jump on in. You know, I just think the only part I'm worried about with Trump, I mean, you know, he's temporary. We talked about this on the show before. I think Brexit's more dangerous. But I am worried about him papering the judicial system with judges that will...
stuck there for life.
And they will directly change people's day-to-day lives.
Well, and we were sort of mentioning about him making changes. And Scaramucci, 10 days, lasts about as long as a yeast infection. 864...
Funny you know about that.
I wouldn't know.
I have no idea what that means.
864,000 seconds. What the hell happened there? What do you think happened?
You know, I think that interview with The New Yorker didn't do him any favors, but only because he criticized some people very close to Trump. I don't think Trump's making any decisions. I don't think he's bright enough. But I think Bannon, the rumor is that he actually can suck his own cock. That's not just a thing to scare the press. And what makes me laugh is a lot of the media actually have come out. It's as though they think that's not physically possible, but it is. I've dated Macedonians. So
okay.
Macedonians?
Macedonian.
That's a Macedonian.
As opposed to Caledonians?
Yeah, emphasis on the Mass. Yeah, he was a
Mesopotamians?
Gymnast. Yeah. No, he's Macedonian. I know.
So if he could suck his own dick, what did he need you for?
Exactly. That's. I just would leave the room and leave the... No, we would go to party. Anyway, so yeah. So yes, it's possible. Anyway, people behave as though, how can that be? Well, it... But anyway, you look at Bannon, somebody has to do it. But I guess the point is that, you know, that inner circle is much, so to speak, a tighter fit than we thought before. I think that a lot of people thought that there was some way, excuse the expression, to penetrate that circle because Bannon seemed to be going away a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Trump is so unapologetic about how disloyal he is to his close, you know, people. So it just seems as though he's going to kick them all out anyway. It seemed like Mooch was going to take all of their positions. And maybe for a minute, Trump thought about that.
Do you think just because he's this Wall Street sort of kick-ass guy that actually sells his company?
Yeah, I think you probably identify that. I think, you know, Trump probably went up and saw Mooch as kind of, you know, a boy from back in the hood, mm-hmm. and then Jenny from the block, and thought, oh, yeah, we'll get some of these guys in. And then you guys had Bannon and Stephen Miller, who is fucking crazy. I mean, like,
from
scary.
A liberal family, too.
Yeah, from a very liberal family. He did a whole kind of rant during his university days about how Hispanics should not pick up our trades from the... cafeteria because that's their job to pick him up. And now he's dictating policy and shouting down CNN reporters. But yeah, and I think that's what it comes to. Mooch just thought he'd just step in and go, hey, good to see you again. And these people went, we don't like him.
Yeah.
And that was it. He was
I also
gone.
Think that there's, you know, they see their power be diminished a bit with him around. And I think that for them, it's not about the presidency or about monitoring safety for Americans or the borders or trade. It's not about any of that. They don't understand any of it. None of them have any political experience. I think what it's about is improving their brand. And that's the one thing he pointed out about them. And that's when they booted him. Because he did say about Bannon, the sucking your cock thing was actually about improving his brand.
Yeah.
He didn't mean it literally, although, again, it's a rumor. But once he pointed that out, that's what lifting the curtain means, is looking behind and seeing, oh, this is about these guys and their own personal wealth and fame.
But isn't that what it happens, I mean, from the top down, from POTUS down? I mean, you know, a lot of people would say that Trump started this whole thing, maybe not to be president, but to just increase his own popularity.
To improve
brand.
His NBC pay for his contract.
Well, nobody looked more surprised that he won than he did.
Yeah.
You know, and of course...
Shit, now I have to do a real job.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I get my kids to do it?
You saw the young son at the inauguration with the look on his face like, oh, this is going to fuck Disneyland for me. Yeah, little one. He's like, oh, it's boring.
Yeah, he has that look on his face like, I put down Call of Duty 2 for this. Do you have any idea how far along I was with Grand Theft Auto?
So, I don't know what any of that means, but
it's funny.
Getting
back to the Trump thing, I've always contended that for Trump, it was never about making America great. It was about, like you said, the branding. Mm. And it was always going to be about, okay, how am I going to parlay this into, you know, running Apprentice International or some other shit like that. And And I've always said, you know, when it's all, you know, when it's all done, I don't know where it's going to go with this, that, the other. And the Americans who didn't care about politics are now coming up with catchphrases that they think was going to handle the situation. There will be the big tell-all book that'll blow the lid off everybody. And I firmly believe the person who's going to, you know, essentially sign his name to that will be Trump. Trump will get a ghostwriter like he did with The Art of the Deal, and he will blow a book. You know, it'll sell billions of copies worldwide. How I tried to make America great and how these people ruined everything. And it'll be laughable. It'll be so fucking hilarious.
You know what's weird about Trump, too, to me, is because he's a gangster, a real estate, sorry, developer from New York. It's so strange how fragile he is about criticism. Tender he is when people say,
he's,
you know,
never been beat up.
He's a glass haircut.
But he's also declared bankruptcy several times, and he's been a stooge in the media so many times and fired from NBC for The Apprentice. So he's... Also, he made a lot of his money in showbiz, so he must have something of a thick skin at this point.
Well,
no,
I mean,
nothing.
We've talked about it earlier, but he did say on shows when he did like Saturday Night Live or any of the talk shows, you can joke about my hair, you can joke about my relationship with my daughter, you cannot joke about bankruptcies, and you cannot bring up my bankruptcies. That was the only thing he said you could not talk about.
I guess we've all got tender, you know, points and little buttons we don't want pushed.
But if you go ahead claiming to be this billionaire and all this sort of wise and, you know, investor, and you keep losing money on casinos. Casinos are, come on, it's pretty easy to make money on casinos,
also
long as you're not an idiot.
If you run for president, I mean, Mooch found out in about 24 hours that his, I did remember reading the paper last week thinking, did he really want this? I mean, finding out that his wife dumped him during a birth, the second child, because he was on Air Force One, and now he's cruising gay porn stars on Twitter. Did he really want his entire life exposed? And that's what Trump must have known was going to happen.
Well, he also sold his company. So now, I mean, obviously he's got his name out there a bit more so he can rebrand himself.
But you also know that if you're a presidential appointee and you have any businesses that are conflicting interests, you get to sell them and not pay any taxes on them.
That's another reason why I thought Trump took the position in the first place, hoping not have to pay tax, because he has sold a few places. But I just go back to that thing where I just think he wants. Has he signed the sanctions on Russia? Has he signed that?
He did sign it begrudgingly.
He wants to pay back Putin for the money he owes him. That's what this is about.
You think so? Interesting enough, you got a communications director, which was Scaramucci, or Mooch was. They replace him with General John Kelly. Is it good to have a general?
He's
as
a great
communications?
American. Great American. Yeah. Highest ranking soldier in the country.
And so he should be your communications director?
No, he's someone that will take orders. Obviously, that's what he's good at.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
He'll just tell him what
but
to do.
But taking orders, I mean, I would think you'd want to put him in a different position than communications director.
Well, what are the odds? How long do you think it'll last? Because there's a point where you are the good little soldier, and then there's a point where you don't like being... I know this from friends of mine who are military. They do not like to be told what to do by people who have no military experience.
Sure.
I mean, there's the commander-in-chief. Yeah, I have some friends of mine, and they're ex-Marines, and they're like, voted for Republican, don't care how much of a piece of shit he is, you know, that's it. He's, you know, I don't care, he's a president, you got to take those orders like that. But I think when you get up further up the line, when you become, you know, like where Kelly is and the rest of the Hee-Haw gang, is there's like, wait a minute, you've never been under fire, you've never known this, you've never known this, never known that, and now you're telling me to go against, you know.
Yeah.
So I think there'll be a point where he just goes, I'm going to go buy a cabin.
Or maybe someone else is doing the job and they just want to put someone forward and say, this is the guy, but there's like three other people doing it.
Do you think that maybe he's brought in because of all this infighting that's happened with all these guys after Mooch, that maybe it's like, okay, General, come in here and just clean it all up.
Well,
like,
I think he's seen
it.
Or it's the militarization of the administration.
Well,
which has happened already. It's been a coup. It's a political coup. Trump's win is a political and a military coup as well. And I think maybe the military was saying, we need somebody up there in the White House now. You need to stick somebody up.
Yeah, because it's getting out of control. We don't want to lose this.
Well, they also want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And they helped him win, and they want to know what they get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think when I saw him in the paper last week with all the badges and medals, I'm like, get her. And then I thought they're pushing forward another candidate. Because Trump announced his candidacy in Poland, which is where Hitler started his campaign.
That one.
Hitler didn't announce in Poland.
No, he pushed forward.
He pushed forward.
But no, Trump announced it.
And Poland pushed back.
A little bit, for a while.
Yeah, there's nothing like sending the cavalry against the panzer tanks in World War II.
And then they just killed all the Jews after the war anyway. But yeah, it was Trump started there. And I think that he wants to be, I mean, obviously he wants to be president in 4 years.
You think?
He said he does.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's what he says.
Yeah.
Interesting. We'll get into the other thing. I don't know if you guys saw this guy, this Simon Reborn, the UK guy who hacked all the emails.
Mm.
Did you see that?
Got a hold of...
Hilarious. He's hilarious.
He's very funny.
Yeah.
He's playful.
So, Yeah, he was very funny. And he also, I was following him on Twitter. Now, his account seems to have disappeared on Twitter because he only had like a couple thousand followers, but he did say, "Hey, White House, so sorry. It was just a joke. I'll stop doing it." But Jesus, you know.
He pretended he's one of his sons.
He
for
pretended
a little
he was
while,
Jared Kushner. Yeah. So he had said some stuff from. I invited him to a party. He invited Tom Bosart, who is the Homeland Security Advisor, to a party. And then Bosart's like, "Sounds good. I'll give you my email." And then so he came and he wrote another one. So he wrote one pretending to be Priebus to Scaramucci, saying, "I'd promised myself I would leave my hands mud free. But after reading your tweet today, which stated how soon we will learn who in the media has class and who hasn't, you pushed me to this. That tweet was breathtakingly hypocritical, even for you. At no stage you act in that way it's even remotely classy. You believe that the standard by which everyone should behave toward you, General Kelly, will do a fine job. I'll admit they'll even do it a better job than me. But in a way that transition has come around has been diabolical and hurtful. I don't expect a reply." Then Scaramucci responded, "You know what you did. We all do, even today. But rest assured, we are prepared. A man would apologize."
See, what did he do?
See,
that's
this,
what
this
I want to know.
I, you know, Jared Kushner, right? He goes up to a hotel room with Donald Trump Jr. and Manafort, who is, you know, admittedly a bit sketchy. He's the kind of guy you're like, yeah. "Hey, we're gonna like, you know, we got a bunch of teenage girls here. Can you watch the door?"
Yeah, yeah.
And these three guys went up there to meet with a female Russian attorney who has some dirt on Hillary. They went up to spit roast her.
Yeah,
that's what they did. And Manafort was going to hold a camera. That's what happened. And what happened? They got up there and they went, "Oh wow, you really don't have any. You want to talk about adoption?
Yeah,
Are any of the girls teenagers?
That's like wasted two Viagra on this
I'm
meeting.
Out of here.
Jesus,
yeah, exactly, exactly.
It's terrible.
Yeah, Cialis is not going to help you with this.
So he writes back. The fake Priebus writes back. This guy, this Simon Reborn.
I'm just dying to know what he thinks he did.
I can't
though.
Believe you're questioning my ethics. This so-called mooch who can't even manage his first week in the White House without leaving upset in his wake. I have nothing to apologize for. And then Scaramucci responded, "Read Shakespeare, particularly Othello. You are right there. My family is fine, by the way, and will thrive. I know what you did. No more replies
from me."
So
he backstabbed somehow Trump, but Trump's not black. I don't get it.
Does
it not say something, though, that when we talk about all this hacking and it's like, "Oh, did the Russians hack the election?" This guy got right in.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This guy off his iPhone got right in.
Right. Which, by the way, backs up Trump's assertion that, "Oh, it wasn't the Russian. It was some 400-pound guy in a bedroom somewhere really bored."
Yeah. Well, that happened to Podesta with Hillary. Yeah. But, I mean, this is something.
Mr. Robot. I mean, you know, it's just who's going to run the world in a year is a 19-year-old bored kid sitting in his bedroom in Idaho.
Yeah. With no work ethic.
Yeah. But I mean, I think one thing that the internet, it offers you is anonymity, but it also removes responsibility. I think people like fucking around with authority figures.
That's why cyberbullying is so popular.
All right.
So what do you think is going to... I just wonder what's going to happen to this guy. You know, this guy who's done it. Because he obviously did it playfully.
They'll hire him.
Well, hire him or...
Somebody will hire him.
Yeah.
Somebody will hire him.
Yeah.
Some think tank, smart group, whatever, you know.
They'll do it Western Europe to the Nazis after the war.
Electronic.
Bring all the top talent in.
They put us on the moon. You know, that's what happened. And so somebody will hire him to put us on the electronic Mars. And... yeah, if he's not, unless Edward Snowden is already kind of like, "Hey, I got a free room."
That guy should be shot in the back of his head. I've said this on the show before.
But
you know, did you read about that legislator who was speaking to a NASA scientist before the House, and he asked the NASA scientist like a week ago, "There is life on Mars, right? Like a couple thousand years ago?"
Uh-huh.
And the scientist said, "Yeah, that's really highly unlikely."
Yeah.
This is what these politicians sit.
They watch a movie because it's just like, you know, mother
high.
Just watch some stuff.
Yeah, but when Matt Damon was up there, he was growing potatoes
out of his own shit.
Yeah, out of his own shit. So if you can't think that
when Matt Damon, come on, jeez, if Damon could do it, surely we can
put a team
together.
Yeah,
yeah.
I also wonder though, when this guy hacking though, is this going to affect our freedom in the long run? Because the more that we start hacking into people, that the more that the government starts cracking down. You know what? We want to crush your civil liberties a bit. We want to make sure that you can't do these kind of things anymore.
Civil liberties. You're in the UK. You're funny, but I think you're right. I think that it does. It maybe, but they'll always find ways to get around it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like they shut down all those, you know, a lot of the sort of dark web.
Yeah.
People that were selling weed, but as soon as they did that, the two main sites they shut down. 10 other ones open up.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but what are you talking about? You know, "Oh, we're going to lose our liberties, lose our freedom, losing this and that." Going, yeah, on the phone, online. But you know what? I can walk right out the front door, buy the weed I want, buy the guns I want, walk down to the next door down. You want to buy some weed and guns? Yeah, I got this and that. Am I on the internet? No. You know, am I making phone calls? Do I got a beeper? Fuck no. Yeah, you can still do this shit. Just get your motherfucking ass off the web. Quit being so reliant on this new god in the palm of your hand and do the legwork.
Are
do
you encouraging people to go buy guns and pot? Is that yours?
I have guns and pot. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I want to live in your neighborhood.
Which, by the way, when I was back in Idaho, I was at a sporting goods store, and a friend of mine here...
Is that a euphemism? Or were you
no, we really had a sporting goods store. Right. Big one. It's called Black Sheep. And right. So the... And a friend of mine said, hey, can you go buy me some targets? You know, he wanted some, you know. I said, well, it'll be tough because it's Idaho, so it'll be tough to find the non-racist ones. And so I went in, and I said, this and that and the other. And he goes, what do you do with these? And, you know. And I said, well, a friend of mine in the UK wants them. England, what do you want to live there for? I'm like, well, it's a healthcare issue and freedom of movement, and you get to see the world and this and that. And he goes, yeah, but that thing on London Bridge. I'm like, dude, they had that sorted out in 8 minutes. 8 minutes. I said, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho is a town of 44,000 people. Do you think the cops here who are actually L.A. veterans would have got that shit sorted out that fast? No. And he goes, but Trump's going to sort them out. And at that point, you go, you look at a guy, yeah. And behind him is a half a block worth of assault rifles. He has a gun on his, and you think, is this the time to get into a political discussion? But I can't agree, so I just go, I wish he'd stop tweeting.
Yeah.
All right, got to go. You know?
We're talking about playing politics and playing politics with health, this whole Obamacare and the repealing of the Obamacare and Congress and John McCain with brain cancer basically rattling the stick. What the fuck is going on?
Did you like the way how you voted? Just walked up? No, he did it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, big show. Yeah.
Dropping the mic. That's probably all the energy he had left
still a
from
hero.
Fighting brains.
Okay. Gotta respect a guy who lived in a box for 3 years, but it is strange, I think.
And not by choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think. There's such a disparity of political support for anything even remotely near some sort of diplomacy. You know, everything's about either you're on this team or on that team, you're on this side or that. And some of it seems to be caught up in people's own personal wealth. I mean, you know, it just seems like the disparity of wealth in the U.S. is growing as the politics get more and more extreme.
Well, I mean, Trump's demanding that Congress votes again. You know, you've got the Koch or Koch brothers behind him. You know, Koch, I prefer sometimes the latter depending on what they do. But, you know, how can you play political agenda with people's health? You know, when it comes down to people... You know, you're talking about survival, but people are dying, and people have got to pay these premiums. And, you know, you've got deductibles, Obamacare. What do they say? The deductibles are $3,500 a person individually and $7,000 a family. Who can afford to pay that?
Well, you know, what's weird. When it first came out, I looked into what it would cost in my hometown for the bronze plan, which was $275 a month, $5,000 deductible, two doctor visits a year. That's it, right? And of course, you go, thank God I live here. And now that exact same coverage has jumped to over $500, like $510, $530 or something like that. And so what the Affordable Care Act did is it affected the American population on a checkbook level. I mean, you know, Bush started an illegal invasion of a sovereign nation and, you know, millions died. But, you know, they were over there. That doesn't affect me, you know. And I'll give a serviceman my seat because I'm for the country and that bullshit. But now suddenly... You know, here's the thing that's going to affect everybody, and it's going to help a lot of other people. And you look at your premiums like, holy shit. And you're like, why is this so much? Well, because you didn't want to go for single payer. You want to do this because you thought it was part of communism and socialism. And Americans believed it, you know, lock, stock, and barrel, that they, if you went for socialized medicine, the next step was they're going to take our guns. I mean, I have friends of mine who really, really believe that. But now you go to them and go, hey, by the way, if I took 11 to 15% of your annual income and put forward full coverage insurance, would you have taken that? Oh, yeah. But you wouldn't. You fucking voted down, you goddamn hypocrite. And so now what the cut is now, they want to get rid of it. It's not a matter of taking insurance away from 24 million Americans. It's about giving the 1%ers back, you know, the $810 billion that they use to subsidize Medicaid. You know, which is for people who don't have anything. And there are people, including my parents, who would have fucking died miserably if it wasn't for Medicare.
Isn't that brain cancer senator? He's on Medicare, right? He's got the gold standard
probably,
Medicare.
Yeah, saving his
But
you know, if you serve at a national level, if you're a House of Representatives for 2 years, Senate, you know, for one term, you get full health care for life.
Oh, right. That's an incentive.
Yeah.
I do wonder, though, if it's worth saving all those Americans. I know people here are concerned, but... Do they really want to save some of those people?
Well, that's the other question. To what degree? To what degree is the state responsible for people? Yeah.
You could weed out the maybe 60. Trim it.
But the other issue I would look at, though, is the insurance companies. Why are they not tackling insurance companies who put on ridiculous rates, who charge you like...
None of it's
$100 a Band-Aid. You know, like, why
You can go to them with a cash offer. Go, hey, I was in there for 4 hours. It was a couple years ago for a concussion and snowboarding. And it was $4,200. And I had travel insurance, you know, and they said, well, you take care of it. They called me four times a week. We need payment. I said, well, you have why don't you put it in your credit card? No, I'm not going to do it. And then I said, look, it's $4,200. Will you take a cash settlement? And they said, oh, yeah. And it would have been like $1,600, for the cash settlement. But I'm not going to give them that because it wouldn't be covered on my travel insurance. So if you are willing to go in there and offer them cash off that, yeah, you can get it knocked right down.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had a stomach infection. I was there a few months ago, and I went to the local hospital, that was supposed to be the free hospital. Anyway, full of Latina families, and some drug addict who had his face beaten so many times that it was over here. And I went for a piss, and I couldn't use the men's toilet because people were living in it.
Okay.
Their luggage was blocking the door. Anyway, they did some tests on me, and I shit in a plastic hat, the whole thing. And I was there for about an hour, and they said, I'm just visiting. I didn't really, I played that game. Mm. And I gave them my address, whatever. It is my permanent address, California. But anyway, I said, I don't have any money. Oh, you'll be fine. They sent me a bill for $2,000. And I went to pay it, like you. I was going to settle, offer them a couple hundred. And the woman said, yeah, we can't do that. In fact, we have to arrest you. We have to call the police because you don't have insurance. Can you wait here? So I went around the corner, and this woman said, no, leave now and go to this place and get that and work. You'll work it out if you fill out that form, then they'll pay for it. And there is a way to get the bill paid eventually, but only because I had a car and I look like this, and they were nice to me at that other office I went to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
and you're white.
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean. I mean, I played the game. The woman who helped me at the other office turned out to be, very nice and young and white, and I charmed her a little bit. Anyway, it's a nightmare. The whole thing's a complete disaster. But I have to say, you go for something here a little bit. A lot of my friends go into private care for special stuff because the NHS just says no, we're not going to help
private
you.
Private care,
no.
I actually have private care just in case.
I'm thinking about getting it.
I haven't been to a doctor in 5 years. But
it's not expensive here, private care. It's like it's $50 a month or something.
Yeah, right? I think I pay $180 a year just for extra coverage.
Yeah.
But I'll say I had a friend of mine who was in the States, was in Detroit, and was going in for back surgery. And was in for supposed to be in for like 3 or 4 days, but there kept a person kept coming in to check me. It wasn't a doctor, and this person said, "Who are you? Like, what are you doing?" It turns out it was someone from the insurance company wanting to see if they could get them out quick. So it's all it's like basically the insurance people. They have people that go around the hospitals to make sure that they can slide and cut you off a bit. So if the doctor's, you know what, I think you need to stay here for 6 days. Insurance company's like, no, I think we can get out in two. They should be fine.
I got a friend of mine back home, and she has, they diagnosed her with this really, really rare condition. I mean, it's like 1 in 2 million kind of thing. So she has to take these pills that amount to, a couple hundred, like $400 a pop. She takes, five a day, something like that, one of those things. Has these injections she has to take in twice a month. There's $1,600 in injections. So her entire just pharmaceutical bill is $80,000 a year. So her new insurance provider, because she had this one, of course they get bought and sold like a mortgage does, came in and said, we're not going to pay for that anymore. And they're like, why? Well, we've never heard of that, so we're not going to pay for that. And the doctor's telling the insurance company, no, this is a real thing. It's just super, super rare. And the insurance company's going, well, we've never seen it before, so we're not paying for it. And the doctor goes, you've never seen it before because it's 1 in every 2 million people have this. And the insurance company, they're just not budging. They're like, we're not paying for this. Because we've never seen this before. We've never done this before. Mm-hmm. And I have a similar thing a few years back, a bunch of years ago, a buddy of mine had, there's a really rare condition that Mesopotamians and Scandinavian people get, and it's a tumor buried in their spine. So he had the thing removed. There was only one surgeon in the fucking world who does it, St. Vincent's in New York City. So he gets back and he submits all the paperwork to the insurance company. Insurance company comes back and says, we think this is too high. For this particular procedure and this and that. And the doctor was priceless. He came back and said, well, considering I'm the only person in the world who does this, I would like to know where you get your pricing structure from and who you've been talking to, because I would like to talk to him how he does this surgery, considering, as far as I know, I'm the only person, it was in the letter, in the world who does this. But they're still, they held it. No.
This is why some doctors don't want to take insurance. I mean, I do have a dentist who won't deal with insurance companies in California. Because of stuff like this.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, they'll take paid vacations, buy chemical or pharmaceutical companies to take vacations and go to Cancun and things
but,
like
I mean,
that.
But, I mean, you know, imagine the position they're in. They've got a whole staff dealing with a billing structure that's completely... It has no sense, no rhyme or reason. They're just trying to get paid for what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why there's no regulation of insurance companies whatsoever. I don't get it. Every time I go back to the U.S., I just look around and think, you are all a bunch of fun. For one thing, my friends, all the yoga ladies I hang with, are all drugged. All of them are drugged. Drugs in the morning, wake them up. Drugs when they sleep. Yeah. I had no idea. I thought they were zen. Yeah. And no, I thought maybe it was coffee made them a bit crazy in the middle of the day, or their dogs, or their kids, or the ballet, or the whatever they... the strain and stress of getting a new Alfa Romeo every 2 years. It's none of that. That's none of it. Because that's all handled by, you know, Conchita in the office. It's all the pills they take. And I only know because I went away with them on a yoga retreat last year in Maui. And I heard the jingling of pills in the morning. You know, I go to get them for breakfast. I'm like, what were you doing? Are you taking a lot of vitamins? No, that's my... All of them. It's all a haze.
Wow.
All of it. It's like they... It's not reality they don't want to deal with. It's everything. It's everything.
And I'm also a little disappointed, Scott. I'm single. You haven't introduced me to any of these drugged up yoga ladies. Because rich drugged up yoga ladies sound kind of...
They're pretty hot. I mean, their husbands are sometimes absent. I'll get you some numbers.
Okay, that's great.
but they're great. And the reality of their lives is pretty good, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's not that they don't want to deal with. It's just everything.
Have you noticed a lot of people that from Europe, they go to America the first time, and then they come back and they go, what'd you do? Oh, we did the usual hotspots, you know, Florida, Vegas, this and that. Oh, yes, and that. So some friends of mine who just got married, the same-sex marriage, we went to San Francisco and that, and they came back, Sean, how was it? And he goes, that was really great. We like this. We like it. Should have gone there. My God, there's a lot of adverts for fucking drugs on television.
And all the disclaimers.
And they're like, is America really that broken? I'm like, no, it's a lot of money, you know?
That's why
we have the big problem with the opiate deal. Because I was listening to thing on BBC World Service to where they asked doctors here, why don't you have the same opiate problem that they have here? And I think we talked a bit about that. It's because they don't prescribe that. Yeah, and in America, it's just like, get it out there, get it out there, there. But I have friends of mine that are... I stayed with a buddy of mine when I was back home for a day. So I come out and I opened up his medicine cabinet. I'm like, I go, oh my God, this is when your dad died. Did you take all the pills? What the fuck is this?
No, they all got loads.
Yeah, just loads and loads and loads. And they get it for nothing. It's like, the doctor's like, here you go, go away. Here you go, go away.
Now they're talking about the expensive things about taking care of people and the military. Obviously, when they're saying they're banning transgenders in the military, as Trump has come out,
he'd like to,
out of nowhere. Out of nowhere, just says it. And he's saying that it's going to cost them, it's going to save them $2 billion.
All this is made up, and it's
$2 billion, and they estimate there's maybe 3,000 to 5,000 transgenders
in the military. I thought there was
15,000. Did you hear any soldiers talking about it, though?
I've heard soldiers and generals talking about it, and the ones, I mean, you hear about the ones that are obviously quite vocal and sort of say...
There's that one Navy SEAL that's like the Navy SEAL, the blonde-haired one with the nice tits.
Well, they seem to not give a shit. I just was introduced to a couple of former Navy guys in the British Navy 2 nights ago at the Comedy Store. And I said, are the American soldiers, because they deal with them a lot. And they said, they're great. They're really efficient and they're really great. And they don't care where you're from or who you are or what you do. And
soldiers are a whole different thing. I mean, I know a lot of the guys, especially here in London. I know a lot of guys and guys that are Marines at the embassy. They're amazing guys.
But with all the shit going on, this is the point that Trump wants to chase around.
And I think it took the military by surprise too, because you sort of go, was there a trans problem?
Yeah, there's nothing.
You know, or is it like picking on one kid in the class and going, you out? And everyone's like, I didn't know.
But you know how the military deals with it. They just kind of like, all right, yeah, we'll go in here, we bomb these guys and make sure this is happening, this and that. And we need to, like, sorry, what was that? What was that? Trump said, what? Shut up. Anyway, that was it.
They don't.
Their attitude was like, no, it's not true.
Well, that's why it feels like a political coup, because a lot of Trump's security have said they won't take a bullet for him. Yeah. They keep moving back when he gets in the car and stuff. And then a lot of the soldiers have said that we won't take an order from him either. That's what a political.
Trans people said they wouldn't take orders.
No,
first,
this is so before. Yeah. This is during the election because he had.
They took orders, otherwise it wouldn't be trans.
Well, he criticized the military during his election, and then I mean he criticized.
Sure. He criticized everybody. Yeah.
Yes,
McCain, which pissed off a lot of my friends.
And so a lot of soldiers said that is our guy, not that guy. So we're not going with that guy. We're sticking with that guy.
And I mean, there's 18 other nations that do allow transgenders in the military. So I mean, what's the big deal of America's the largest military?
Look, if you want to join the military, it doesn't matter who you are. Go for it. I think they should be happy you're there. It's like the church. hurts. They'll take anybody at this point, I think.
I think they're saying what their whole and Trump's, and it's sort of ridiculous, is that it costs $120,000 to $200,000 for the surgery and the maintenance of drugs and all these kind of things. And we don't want to have to pay for that because someone decides they go trans during while they're in the military.
What does Trump's hair cost? You know, in a way, I think he must lay in bed at night just turning a light on and off and on and off like every crazy serial killer in the movie, because I just think he thinks I'm not getting anywhere with this. I'm not getting anywhere with this. And he's not going to get anywhere. It's going to be another 3.5 years of him in court fighting, or his administration fighting various lawsuits in court, like it has been for the last 6 months. We don't even hear about the lawsuits anymore, but there are hundreds filed against him.
Oh, I'm sure.
I wonder, because, you know, his wife, Melania Trump, is going on kind of like the first lady, her first lady outing. You know, tour.
She's going to Toronto to the Invictus Games.
Yeah. Well, there's a good strip club there too, so she can get a little cash during the day.
There's quite a few. I just flew back from there today.
Yeah. And those strippers are still crying that you're gone. Right?
No, they're all got haircuts like mine, and they're named Barb.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's
the other way.
Right. Yeah. Hot.
But I mean, we'll get into this and then getting into Russia, because that's the other big thing. Obviously, the Russia thing we thought was going to be good, and now it's escalating again. He's had to sign these sanctions unwillingly.
Mm-hmm. Off the camera, by the way.
Medvedev is like, hey, this is getting worse for everybody, mm-hmm. you know? And the sanctions are only going to push China, North Korea, and Russia together, because everyone's sort of getting put in this whole piss pot. It just seems like Congress is trying to punish, because these things are, you know, they're not going to give back the diplomatic compounds they stole from Russia, which, you know, if you're going to take diplomatic, you know, buildings from people, like, that's part of the whole world policy is keeping diplomacy open and taking them. So, I mean, what's really behind it? Is this Congress just trying
to
punish
Trump?
They've
expelled a lot of the staff from the U.S. Embassy in Moscow.
They're getting rid of 755. My sister used to live in Moscow and work with a lot of the staff. And they have great buildings and, you know, dachas and stuff they would go to. And it was a really good way for the Americans and Russians to actually blend.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't know how they expect to improve diplomacy when they do things like this. And also, you would think that'd be more important, actually, at this point for the U.S. government and Russia and China, maybe, if they release any information at all, to be working together on this little terrorism problem we have. But I think the terrorism, like it always has, and like it did in Central America in the 1970s and 80s, and like it has in the Middle East since 1981, I think the terrorism serves governments. I don't think they want it to go away. I think they like it.
Yeah. Well,
it's a moneymaker.
It is. And also, it gives the public what they think is an enemy that distracts them from who's actually screwing them over.
It perpetuates authoritarianism. It does. You know? It's one of those things. You've got to have an evil empire.
It gives you a reason to chop away civil
rights,
too.
Which is why we need to bring back the Cold War.
I miss it.
Me too.
I miss the outfits.
Yeah.
I do. I miss
Kennedy hats.
And the marching.
And, you know, everything's better when it's illegal.
Do you think, in a way, though, Congress is doing this in a way to humble Trump in front of the world, to basically emasculate him in front of Putin? Putin's a very strong man. It's like, yeah, Congress, we make the laws. We're the ones telling you what to do.
It could be that. Actually, Trump is building congressional power by weakening himself. And that's the way Putin looks at it.
Yeah.
But I also think that everyone's just trying to show off to the public and say, look what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting something done, because nothing's really getting done, right? So maybe, you know, I can't help but think it's all a little puppet show for us.
Yeah. Well, it seems like the truck tires are stuck in the mud and everything's spinning and everyone's just getting coated in the mud right now. And the truck's not fucking moving.
They do have midterm elections, too.
Yeah.
The legislative branch.
Yeah.
And they're worried about losing all their jobs, I'm sure. Although they can't even seem... Paul Ryan can't even seem to plan a month in advance. I'm sure that Trump scares the hell out of him, because everything Trump has done, Ryan has felt obligated to support.
Mm-hmm.
But I assume it's going to cost him his office. I mean, Trump's approval ratings have not gone over about 33% over the last 4 months. They're going to get lower, too, because now...
It's at 22,000.
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I know.
Amazing.
But
and Trump is taking, obviously... You know, it's never done any better since we've been elected.
But
is
that sustain itself?
Is that based on manufacturing, though?
No, it's not. It's not. It's a false bubble. It is right now.
It's another one,
like,
right?
Bernie Madoff, sort of, let's Ponzi scheme.
I don't know if it's a Ponzi thing, but it's definitely a false bubble. It's not like manufacturing jobs are coming. I mean, look at carriers. We brought all these jobs back, but they actually laid off a ton of people. And still moved everything out of the country.
And he knew that was going to happen. He lied to us about that. It's weird, because he's trying to build a special relationship even stronger with the UK. But I think the UK is dead in the water.
It's, I think, interesting in 2 years. It's no one's sort of stepping up. And we're getting punched in the throat every day.
I don't think, I mean, the EU is, I think EU got, They got scared when the UK left. They were like, holy shit, we better get our,
together. But it seems to have empowered them now.
Yeah, it's empowered them. It's kind of like brought them all around going, whoa, you know, because the Netherlands would like to go. There's a, you know, among others. And for, I think, you know, the day after the Brexit vote, it felt like the EU could collapse and last one out gets a check. But now they're kind of like banding together a bit. And
yeah,
now,
but the EU.
But as far as like the UK getting back into the EU, it's done. I mean, they, yeah, you so know, so. Globalization failed the lower working classes. You know, all the manufacturing stuff they used to have in the UK that they thought, oh, yeah, we got this, we have austerity measures, this is going to happen. But you know, I work on motorcycles and I have tools made in Sheffield that are unbreakable compared to the Chinese ones I have next to it. And if I want to go back to the factory that made these, it's not there. You know, I mean, the building's there, but now I can get a gluten-free bagel in it.
Well, the British are, in a way, economically, were their own worst enemies 30 years ago. They self-destructed all their own business and sent it abroad. And those jobs are never coming back. That's why I feel bad when I play places like, I go to these towns, you know, the working-class communities and stuff, and my family's from, my mother's from a working-class background. And, you know, my grandfather, he re-educated himself at a very old age. And he went back to work. And I just think my husband's re-educating himself right now. That's Britain's only chance.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I find the EU is almost like, to me, like Netflix. They're telling a lot of stories right now, but deep down, they're broke. And they can barely afford to keep going
on
before
Amazon
buys them up.
You know, when you go abroad, I just think
Netflix is broke?
They were $20 billion.
Why can't
Netflix or international Netflix?
International. They've been spending all this money. UK's, I mean, they lose a lot of money on things. But unlike Amazon, Amazon actually has a shopping center. Yeah. We got Bezos. So
they gave Jimmy Carr $1 million to do a bunch
of DVDs.
Spend.
Let's put a whole bunch of comics on. Spend money, because they want new subscribers. But if you have no other income source.
Yeah, they don't have any.
You know, and if Amazon has an income source.
I just can't figure out why Europe doesn't band together and think, what have we got to sell? Culture. That's all they've got. They've got more than anybody else in the world.
Yeah.
So sell it, bitch.
Yeah.
Like, don't let those leaning towers fall down, you Italian cunts. Like, prop them up.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Germany, everything's nice and clean and new for a good reason. But, you know, that is bright and shiny, and they have industry because they've rebuilt it. They've gone on their way. And they don't have property bubbles because they don't buy in Germany.
They all rent, and it should be looking at ways Germany has
an apprentice system where get out at 16, go. Yeah. You know, I want to be a machinist. I want to be a carpenter. I want to be this and that. And so they put you through this fourth thing, which initially these companies lose money on the apprenticeship thing, but they gain money in the long. So Germany's always been about the long game. And America's always been about the short game.
Yeah.
I want America great right now.
And that annoys me.
And UK has been poisoned by that.
And parts of Europe, too. You go to Athens. I was just for this comedy festival. It's like the fucking Acropolis. The Acropolis is right there. How can you be broke with that?
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere without seeing it. It's beautiful there. So clean up the beaches and, you know, do something. Fix it. Make it nice. Make it worth seeing. It's weird. You know, you go to Tokyo, you go to Japan, and they don't want tourists. They don't want foreign faces there. They don't encourage tourism in any way.
Yeah.
They're trying to rebuild their industry slowly. It's very painful for them. The Europeans don't have that patience. So if you don't have it.
But if you look at a lot of, even back in the 70s, a lot of the countries and companies always had an innovation fund, and they always had to spend on R&D. And a lot of people now don't believe that R&D is effective, yet research and development is what propels us.
Yeah,
it's what insulates us against these sort of shocks to our economy, because it allows us to go, hey, suddenly this kid's got an idea to clean up the ocean, like create 100,000 jobs. This kid's got an idea to do this. And we're waiting. We're just relying on Kickstarter for this kid to go, hey, I've got a genius idea. Maybe
the thing is, it's not what it used to be. It's not a matter of like, you know, hey, I've just invented this. What is it? Oh my God, I can hold it. I can touch it. It gets stamped out. I can see an assembly line. We're popping it out. So now people think that the innovation is, you know, kitty videos on YouTube. They think that, you know, they're seeing this guy's made, you know, 30, 40, 50, whatever on off the back of that. So they think that's where innovation is. And I think it's left a lot of people behind who like to work with their hands. They like to come up with problem-solving skills, but they don't necessarily have the online electronic dexterity to take care of these issues. So they just go, I'm going to build this, but how can I get it out there? Because I set up a website, you have to do this, you have to social media. I mean, right now, with comedy, you see, you know, who's the people in the forefront of comedy? And with the Just for Last Festival, or I like to call it Just for Them, who's the hot ones? Who's the ones looking out for, you know, we should look out for? And you see what they're doing, and you're like, are you fucking shitting me? Are you really? I mean, yeah, we're kind of inside out rib for my pleasure. Go fuck yourself. It's 1987 all over again. But yet they have, you know, 2.2 million followers on
Twitter.
Did someone
really tell that joke?
They, Yeah, I saw Jimmy Carr do it in 2004.
That's when the Carr show.
But it's one of those things to where it's not a matter of like coming up with innovation. It's more a matter of, you know, how many people can you get to follow your particular, you
or
know,
manipulating tune? The social media effectively. It works for some people.
It does. I can't fault that. But when the entertainment industry and also a certain amount of business is using that, where the accountants are making the decisions rather than the innovators and the engineers and along those lines, where they're going, how much money can we make off of this? Because if you have this, we can put that into branding. And I mean, with Twitter right now, you know, this is a lot of name brand comedians. If they go, oh, by the way, I was just at such and such, and these watches are the best ever.
Yeah.
You know, and they get like $500 for that pump. And which, you know, podcasts or things like that. So that's where the innovation is. How can you get yourself out on social media? Not a matter of like, I've got this thing that's going to cure pollution in the oceans, and it gobbles up plastic bottles and turns it into, you know, spinning pinwheels. How much is it going to cost? Well, it's going to be $10 million up front.
I just worry that these wealthy people, you know, entrepreneurship used to be such a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A part of each company. I mean, New York wouldn't look the way New York does if it weren't for rich families that weren't paying taxes over 100 years ago. But now all the money's in California, and you go there, and a huge theater in downtown San Jose just closed, a repertory house. Mm-hmm. They give a lot of work to actors and stuff. And right down the street is a startup. Right down the street is a very wealthy company. Right down the street is Facebook. It's like, where's the Facebook Opera House?
Yeah.
And where's the
Carnegie's?
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's inside their own Facebook for only the Facebook employees.
It is. They do have entertainment centers. But what I think is they don't see the importance and the value of repaying, even in a small way, the community that's made them so wealthy.
Yeah.
And I think that lack of reciprocation is really distasteful, but also I think it affects the arts the way you're describing, because I don't think there's that support for artists, so they panic and they think, how can I make a lot of money fast? Or they think, how can I be the most innovative on the internet, because that's how everyone's making their. I think it's kind of sad, because I do see young comics that I think are brilliant, and I'm like, why haven't I heard about you yet? But because of like what you described, because they're just comedians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I worked with a guy out in Devon and Somerset, who was like the BBC So You Think You're Funny finals and stuff, and he was really great. I mean, there was another guy in there, and he was all right, but this guy, I was like, wow, you know. And I told him afterwards, I said, hey, I liked it. Have you thought about this? He was like, oh, and we're laughing and having a good time. And it's like what we used to do when you get off stage and you go, have you thought about this? And I like, but it is come down to how much can I make right now at this moment? There is no long-term investment, which is one of the problems with our national parks in America, is this particular administration is looking at all this unused land and all this, you know, allocation for, you know, hieroglyphics and petroglyphs and all this other kind of crap, going, well, fuck that, man. There's like, you know, 100,000 acres of wood there. And so there's land right now in my home state in America to where you used to have access because they would log it and that was fine. And now there's a fence around it and there's armed guards keeping people off the road. And you're like, I've been hunting this road. My grandpa taught me how to. Not anymore. It's gone. Yeah, it's not national. Well, we sold it, you know, 167,000 acres, you know. And the people around here, like, make America great again. And they love to hunt and fish and things like this. And you're like, yeah, you can. But by the way, where you used to, you can't anymore because we sold it because you want to make America great again because they want a short-term payoff like that. That was the coolest thing Teddy Roosevelt ever did, was give us fucking national parks. Mm. And now he's spinning in his grave with one eye he's got left.
Well, you got the largest landowner in the U.S. is Ted Turner.
Yeah, good, but all his stuff is put into a blind trust.
Well, he buys a lot of stuff because he wants to protect all the species.
Yeah,
because he recognized, you know, that, you know, the buffalo and mountain lions and things like that are disappearing, and, you know, probably maybe to impress Jane Fonda and get her back. But he bought all these national parks. He's buying all this land and keeping it all up. I mean, the other thing, the last thing we'll sort of touch on is again that America can be hit with North Korea. North Korea has just demonstrated this new missile, and America sort of changed its tone a little bit. It went from like, going from we'll take you if you fire, we'll take you, to let's talk. Let's see what we can do.
They say, yeah, we're in America, but it's Alaska.
Yeah. Well, no, they're saying the new missiles that they have, the THAAD system, are going to have a hard time hitting it.
It's so the illusions.
They could go in the middle. Yeah. It could hit the West. It could hit
Dutch
California.
Harbor.
You know, I'm not really worried about the North Koreans. I think I'm more concerned about countries with religious fundamentalism that are aiming their missiles at the U.S. because they seem to be a bit more fervent.
Well, I was back in Canada, and I was talking. I was in lunch with a couple of Korean students that were over there, and I sort of asked, "What do you guys think? Like, what do you think?" And she just laughed. She goes, "We don't care." She goes, "It's all we know. Nothing's going to happen." She said, "Because what happens is, America talks this big game, but all it does is it just makes China, you know, they'll say they're going to stop. It's all oil. She says it's all oil because that's what North Korea needs is oil. So America says we're going to shut off the oil. So then Russia sells the oil. And then they say don't sell it, Russia. Then China sells the oil. She said we don't really care. Like, we're not afraid of them. You know, they're very poor. They talk, she told the story about, because there's this reality show series that they have over there where northern people who escape, and it's all them and their life and what it's like for South Korea and the food.
They just stare at a toilet.
Yeah.
But then this girl escaped because something's going on with her family. She goes back to North Korea. It's like, that show is horrible. All of South Korea is terrible. They're all so bad.
I mean, 80% of the people in North Korea live in below poverty level. They're all starving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a high end meth.
I believe...
Really?
Yeah, it's a big mess.
Now that makes me homesick. Yeah. But I believe the whole rigid religious fundamentalist thing, especially America, our new Secretary of Education, Betsy, is like, yeah, you know, we can do faith-based schools. And nobody's, I'm really surprised nobody has said, well, you know, you just greenlit, you know, like a madras, you could, an Islamic fundamentalist school, you just greenlit that. You now said that. You legally can't deny them funds for that.
I think America's a lot more terrifying than North Korea.
Actually. Yeah.
Yeah, so do I.
I mean, if you look at any time a country is torn down by revolution, it's always within, you know? So it's you know, when you have sort of, you know, Rome and all these things, it falls down from within.
It's also scary because the U.S. feels as though they're at the top of the food chain. And no matter how...
They don't want to feel any other
way. Even though America's power is waning, everybody's seeing this. You know, when you have a single power state, the world is calm. When you have multi-power states, that's when war starts. So when you start looking at having, you know, Russia and then Iran, you know, Iran's now like, fuck you. When they come around with the boats, they'll fire back. They'll be provocative with their boats.
I'm not very concerned about those two countries, though, because their military is so out of whack.
But it just takes one. It's China. It's like anything in any war. It just takes one to do something.
Trillions of dollars. Yeah.
See, I've always contended that because we owe them so much money that they could wake up tomorrow morning and invade Taiwan. And say,
what the fuck are you going to do about it?
Ukraine, yeah.
And Trump has already said he recognizes the sovereignty of Taiwan. So that sets up a situation where it in a way encourages China to invade it, to make the point.
Well, that's why he's using his daughter, you know, as the bright, shining blonde girl who sells all the products.
Kid.
And they fall in love with him. The kid's speaking Mandarin.
Learns Chinese.
That's definitely a political thing. You know,
because Mandarin's
don't attack us because look at our little girl.
And Mandarin's really apparently one of the most difficult dialects to learn in China. And the public were so enamored by that child.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, you know, the Chinese, they pretend to give a shit the government. I guess they do. I don't know what they tell her when she's there, but she's a number to them. And I think, you know, it's not about getting people angry because anger is, you know, comes and goes. But the Chinese seem pretty focused. I mean, their GDP last year was like 7%. I mean, that's low for them.
No, they've got to keep those numbers up. Actually, low for them,
but
poverty.
Compared to everybody else, Britain's is 0.5. America's is 3. We had a party in D.C. last week for that.
Yeah.
China's is huge. Can you imagine if British GDP was 14 times higher than it is this year? What people's lives would be like? What would happen to Brexit or the EU in general? The Chinese are completely focused on what they want, and the public is agreeable. That's the thing. There's no protest. That's in China.
That's what I like about and you know this from being there, is that you meet people in China on every economic level. I mean, right down to the street sweepers. If you ask them, you know, are you happy with this? Yeah, because they're Chinese. And you're like, well, what do you think of communism? And communism in the whole timeline of the existence of China is like, really? You know, 4,000, 5,000 years of existence, they have remained essentially ethnically pure.
Yeah, yeah.
And
repelled all invaders. Well, same written language for 4,000 years, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't knock a country that doesn't have any, really, almost no religious strife. That's a big problem in the
U.S. Well, they do in the northern provinces. They've got a lot of Muslim. It's being buried down. You're not hearing about it. You're hearing about people that are
storming
police stations.
They have no political power is what I mean.
Yeah.
But in the U.S., Jesus, they throw that weapon up all the time. And that really stops conversation in the U.S. is really people. And they will vote politically based on their religious beliefs. But China, they don't got them. They don't even vote. Anyway, they have no judiciary. It's pretty enviable if you're talking about an economy that's moving that quickly. I really do think economists look at China and they're with envy and also with terror in this country because there's no way they're going to catch up now. The EU will never catch up to China.
You still have huge levels of poverty there. You still have a lot to grow. And if that growth does stop,
Greece is the poorest country in Europe, and their influx of immigrants is like 25,000 a month, and they have no idea what to do with them. I just think that China looks abroad and thinks there's no problem here. And if the U.S. pushes us, we'll just destroy them.
Yeah.
I mean, we have no...
You'll be done, and we'll survive, because we've always survived.
Yeah.
I'm gonna end it there, though, guys.
200 and some odd years in the U.S., and they have such arrogance.
Oh, I know. And the White House is a new building to them, as Trump said. Guys, thanks a lot for
joining us. He thinks the White House is shit. He said that during a golf
game. He said I didn't say it's shit. Yeah, I didn't say it was shit.
White House is a dump. Why do you hear them?
I mean, it is a dump, but don't say that.
No, he grabs it by the pussy every night, though.
Yeah, maybe it's because it was built by slaves. He doesn't like black labor putting his buildings up.
Well, it was also burned.
And nobody does, by the way. That's a bad thing, right?
Also burned by the Canadians and the British. But
no, it wasn't the Canadians. You had the British over.
We were in there.
They got drunk.
Guys, what do you guys got coming up? If you want to plug anything, anything coming up, Scott?
I'm in the Comedia this weekend. And I'm at the Comedy
Which
Store
one?
This weekend.
Which Comedia?
Down in Brighton.
Oh, for Pride Weekend. And I'll be at the Camden Comedy Festival in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Three nights.
That's great. Well,
at
guys,
the Bill Murray Comedy Room.
Thanks for joining us, guys. Thanks a lot for Scrotus POTUS another week.
Thank you.
Cheers.